Hi, I'm Laura from Hudson at the Hudson Farmers Market. You're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM hands-on radio.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. I'm Philip Grant. On March 11th, President Joe Biden announced that soon every American adult can get in line for a COVID-19 vaccine.
I'm announcing that I will direct all states, tribes, and territories to make all adults, people 18 and over, eligible to be vaccinated no later than May 1. Let me say that again. All adult Americans will be eligible to get a vaccine no later than May 1. That's much earlier than expected. Let me be clear. That doesn't mean everyone's going to have that shot immediately, but it means you'll be able to get in line beginning May 1. Every adult will be eligible to get their shot. And to do this, we're going to go from 1 million shots a day that I promised in December, before I was sworn in, to maintaining, beating our current pace of 2 million shots a day.
Locally, Albany County is the first to reach 25% of the population receiving at least one vaccine dose. As of March 11th, Columbia County is next at 23%, followed by Rensselaer County at 22.7%, Ulster County at 22.6%, then Dutchess County at 19.8%, and Greene County last at 18.2% vaccinated at least once. Those numbers have all doubled in recent weeks, as anecdotal evidence and social media posts indicate it is becoming easier to get a vaccine appointment. The state, for instance, has been running a vaccine site at SUNY Albany, and now there are plans for another site at the Ulster County Fairgrounds in New Platts. The Times Union Capital Bureau is reporting the latest allegations of sexual harassment by Governor Andrew M. Cuomo were reported to the Albany Police Department late March 10th, just hours after the details of an aide's account of what she described as sexually aggressive groping by the governor were made public. The referral was made by Cuomo's office as required by state law. It was confirmed by the Albany PD spokesperson and first reported by the New York Times. While police department spokesperson Steve Smith told the Times the call came from the state police, Cuomo's acting counsel Beth Garvey said that she called and reported the allegations after a lawyer for the aide involved told the governor's office she did not want to file a police report. Smith said the referral did not mean an investigation had begun, but that the police would offer services to the alleged victim. The administration has taken criticism for its failure to refer a complaint from Charlotte Bennett, another Cuomo aide who made allegations against him, to the governor's Office of Employee Relations as required by his own 2018 executive order. The Times Union reported Wednesday evening the female aide has alleged Cuomo aggressively groped her in a sexually charged manner after she had been called to the executive mansion under the apparent pretext of having her assist the governor with a minor technical issue involving his mobile phone. The allegations leveled by the aide, who is the sixth woman to accuse Cuomo of inappropriate behavior, describes the most egregious conduct attributed to the governor to date. In a statement released to the Times Union March 10th, Cuomo denied the latest allegations, saying, and I quote, "The details of this report are gut-wrenching. I am not going to speak to the specifics of this or any other allegations given the ongoing review, but I am confident in the result of the Attorney General's report," end quote. The Office of Attorney General Letitia James is managing the investigation into multiple harassment claims against the governor. And you can read the full story in the Times Union. Bill Williams is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Brush fires blackened areas of Kinderhook, Ulsterlet, and Copeg on Wednesday, March 10. At approximately 1:11 p.m., the Niverville Fire Department and Valencia Rescue Squad responded to a call from 47 Karen Court that a control burn had gone out of control. Fire officials later requested the Valencia Fire Department respond to the scene for mutual aid. That fire was reported out at 2:31 p.m. A much larger brush fire was reported around 1:30 p.m. at 46 Indian Brook Lane in Austerlitz. Fire companies from Austerlitz, Chatham, and Ghent came out and fought the blaze for nearly 2 hours. Chatham Rescue Squad, State Department of Environmental Conservation Police, and State Police helped the firefighters at the scene. The fire was declared out at 3:23 p.m. A third brush fire, which also began as a controlled burn, brought firefighters to 300 Weed Mine Road in Copec. The fire was reported at 4:20 p.m. and was located well off the main road. Copec Fire Department requested Ancram Fire Department respond to the scene with all available manpower as well as the department's brush fighting equipment. The Community Rescue Squad, Columbia County Sheriff's Office, and Columbia County Fire Coordinator's Office assisted. Hillsdale Company was placed on standby at the Copec Fire Station. The fire was brought under control and all firefighters were back in service at 6:50 p.m. Department of Environmental Conservation Commissioner Basil Sagos announced this week that the state's annual burn ban goes into effect on Tuesday, March 16th. Sagos, in a statement, reminded residents that conditions for wildfires are heightened in springtime. He said, and I quote, "It's when most wildfires occur," end quote. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Nick Reisman is reporting for State of Politics. A coalition of health and community organizations in New York are supporting a push for a $1 per pack increase in the state's cigarette tax. The coalition this month released a letter to top state lawmakers in the state and assembly calling for the tax increase as a public health benefit as well as a way to raise money. The groups wrote in a letter, and I quote, "Despite the well-documented benefits of tobacco tax increases, New York has not increased most tobacco taxes in over a decade," end quote. It went on to say, and I quote, "Tobacco tax increases are a win-win-win. They improve public health, reduce health care costs, and generate revenue," end quote. The letter was released by the American Cancer Society Action Network and has the backing of other organizations, including the New York State PTA, the Boys and Girls Club of the Capital Region, and multiple health advocacy groups. It is estimated a tax increase would bring an additional $38.8 million in revenue for the state. Read the full story at nystateofpolitics.com. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, March 12th. The early morning temperature range is 37 in Mackey to 51 degrees in Annandale on Hudson. I swear that place has its own nuclear reactor. The mercury climbs gently to 58 degrees by 1 p.m. this afternoon. Winds are still breezy at just under 10 miles per hour. From dusk to dawn, winds will kick up with gusts reaching 30 miles per hour. Make sure you secure lawn ornaments today. Temperatures will drop to 27 degrees before dawn, then winds calm down again, but the sun only gives us a high of 42 on Saturday. Sunday, the temperatures stay about the same, however, wind gusts return to the 30 mile per hour range, making Saturday nice for hanging out and Sunday nice for kite flying. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 2:15 a.m., low tide at 8:37 a.m., high tide again at 2:32 p.m., and low tide again at 9:05 p.m. Sunset today will be at 5:43 p.m., sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:09 a.m. Looking way up, we see a fast-moving solar wind is due to strike tomorrow, causing G1 class magnetic storms. Solar wind speed is currently 333 kilometers per second at 9.9 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation is fair for day and nighttime conditions. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 23. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
things that I look forward to is, like, if I know I'm going to have, like, a fun day in class, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I know what I'm going to do today. So if I walk in expecting something and I know how to do it, you know, if they make the class fun for me in a way that I'm going to want to show up for it, I'm not going to want to fall asleep in that class. And they're just, like, talking, like, oh, Y equals MX plus B. I'm like, a bland voice. They're tired. We're all tired. So I'm obviously going to fall asleep because I'm unmotivated. I'm not going to want to do anything. Mm-hmm. So, like, when the class is made fun for me, I know I'm going to thrive.
Right. And it's, like, I'm that student that will really raise their hand every 5 seconds if I don't understand. Like, please, no, actually, like, explain this to me because, no, you're going too fast.
Are you still doing that even though it's virtual?
No, and that's the issue.
And that's the issue. I don't want to because it feels way worse.
Yeah, like, it. I don't know. It's something about being on the meet that just doesn't feel right.
when you like, I feel like when you look off on a meeting or, like, I've had some embarrassing moments. Like, I've unmuted and stuff, like, at the wrong time, and I'm like, oh my god. I've definitely, like, I've turned my camera on accident when I was trying to unmute, and I've left the meeting when I was trying to unmute, and so I've had, like, a bunch of those moments that just, like, are forever gonna sit with me. So I try to, like, make the best of my virtual experience. So it gets really weird at times, especially, like, when somebody's Wi-Fi drops or, like, the entire call drops. You don't know if it's you or if it was somebody in the class, or, like, if your teacher's calling on you and you can't hear them, your mic doesn't work. It's a whole bunch of stuff, you know.
There's a lot of issues.
Your point, DJ Popcorn, too, about, like, it helps me when my teacher's, like, got my back and, like, can help me out with stuff. But, like, it sounds like at this point it might be, like, harder for you to have those sorts of relationships because there's that virtual disconnect, and it seems like the onus at this point is more on you as students than it is on the teacher to notice when there's that need and to reach out and ask for it. Whereas when you were in person, I'm sure too the teachers would have a much better understanding of who they need to check in with and, like, who's struggling with, like, they're also on the other side of this screen that, like, they probably miss stuff that they wouldn't have missed in the past.
Yeah, like right now in one of my classes, I have a substitute. Like, he's been here for a couple days. And, like, there's, like, such bad communication where it's, like, so they would have it on this camera thing, like, a paper underneath the camera. But, like, only, like, a quarter of the paper would be showing. And then I would, like, ask him. But it would get awkward when I would have to keep on asking him. So at that point, I'm just like, no, I'm over this. I can't do this. Like, literally.
It's especially those moments when the teacher's like, oh, am I presenting? Can you guys see? Can you guys hear? And you have to unmute every 5 seconds to be like, yes, I can hear you. I can see you. And the worst thing about the entire thing is probably camera checks. Because they expect your camera on, like, the minute you come in. They're like, can I get a camera check from everyone? And I know I'm laying down and I don't want to reach over and hit that button.
Like, my hair looks crazy.
Right. Like, I just woke up. I have crust in my eyes. I can barely move.
Like, what?
Like, I see my sleep paralysis demon currently. Like, I don't want to get up.
Yeah, like, when I'm on online school, I do not shower until after school. So it's, like, ridiculous. Like, I'm looking real crazy right now.
Yes, like, I really can't be seen right now, but you can hear my voice or you can see me in the chat.
Yeah, I literally roll out of bed. I don't even roll out of bed. I pull my laptop onto my bed and then open it.
Right.
And that's my morning. Yes.
That's literally what I have to do. The very second I wake up, I'm literally on a class. Yeah.
I don't eat till after school either.
Really?
Because I only have a lunch on one of the days. So I just be chilling on my phone at my lunchtime.
Yeah, sometimes I don't have enough time to even go. Like, by the time I get up to go and eat, just, like, I'm like, I don't even want to anymore at this point. Or sometimes, like, I don't even get, like, to go and get breakfast or anything. So my stomach will be going, like, I'm like, bro, right now, during living environment, right now, second and third period, right now, like, my stomach wants to do this right now.
Yeah, but honestly, it's a good, like, online school is a good way to, like, say you were hungry in the middle of class, you could just go and just go make something, bring your laptop to the kitchen.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
But yeah, it's like it gives you more freedom to like meet your own needs, but it also sounds like it's kind of awkward to meet your own needs.
Right.
Yeah, and because y'all aren't in a rhythm anymore with where you were in person, like it sounds like just normal habits about when you wake up, your shower routine, your eating routines, all that stuff's off. And I think like it's routine is a really powerful force in our lives, right? Like it can. It's kind of like our way of reminding our body what mode we should be in. You know, if you got a routine before a game, right, that like helps your body, right, and your mind tap into the game mentality, right? Like you do your thing, and every athlete's got their things, their rituals, you know. And I think school is probably similar, right? But y'all have to kind of completely recreate whatever patterns or routines or rituals you would do to be in that right headspace. And like that's, it's extra work, you know what I mean? It's worth it if you can find that vibe and it makes you be able to show up better. But I also appreciate like day after day after day, like, you know, it can be hard to create. It's much harder to create new rituals and to keep them up, especially when it's all on you to stay motivated. And like, even if you're doing that, you're still sitting through a really boring class. So you're like, I tried, but like, it's still terrible. Yeah, that's a tough thing. But I don't know. Have you all developed any special like rituals or habits or like practices that help you get in a better headspace?
Yeah, I actually have. So like when I wake up, I have to get up at least five minutes before so that I can get up, but I have to make sure that I slept long enough so I can make sure that I'm up. Like, I'll go and get something to drink so I can, you know, something that's going to, like, keep me up so that I'm, like, so that I know I'm awake, but I know I have a slight chance of falling asleep, and it's very high that I'm most likely going to fall asleep. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, I'm feeling tired. I got to get up. I got to move and do something. I might have to get up and go to the bathroom once. Splash my face with water. I'd be like, come on, I gotta get myself up. Mm-hmm. Come on, like, stay up.
You're keep self-motivated. Your head in the
game, you know what I'm saying?
Perfect. So, for me, I, like, right by my bed, I have, like, this whiteboard stuck on the wall. And, like, I just write down all the things that I have to do. Because I'm a very, like, organized type of person. Like, I need to see what I gotta do. Like, so, say I had like this many assignments, like I would write down each of the assignments and like check them off as I go throughout the day or like,
yeah, because
school is not the only thing that I do. Like there's like a lot of other things that I have to do. So it's like sometimes like I forget and then that's what kills me.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I write everything down.
Yeah.
If I don't write it down, it's probably not happening.
Yeah. Yeah. So It's like that, the visuals for me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I respect that. That's good advice for anybody listening, you know, just like little things. The little things count, you know, whether it's just moving your body, splashing water on your face, like, yeah, having your whiteboard, keeping yourself organized. But I think that's exactly what we were talking about like, that's college level stuff, right? Like when you get to college, it's the same sort of thing where it's like you're given what you need to learn for the year. You got to get to classes on your own. You got to manage your time differently. So I do think y'all are actually developing habits that'll make you more college ready even than some other people that have been coming in. And I was talking to Devin about this during coronavirus. We were talking about how like people might have this perception that they're not going to be as competitive for college because it's like COVID and grades have hurt or you don't have as many extracurriculars. But I think if you, keep in mind, everyone's in the same boat as you, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not special. Everyone's going to have that kind of impact. And there's a hell of an opportunity in this to be able to make the case to whether it's a future job or college or whatever, that you have all these other skills that you learn because of COVID that I think will, you know, also help you move ahead in your life, you know, and get to where you want to get. And I think prepare you better. So back to the topic, right? Silver linings and positive things from COVID. I do think that is one of them. And I'm sorry y'all have to kind of like go through all that sooner than maybe you were planning, you know? Like I you are losing something in that, I recognize, but I hope you're also gaining something from it.
Yeah, so we can get into some of the cons for a few. So I feel like my first con is probably my biggest con too. Is my horrible, atrocious, down bad sleep schedule.
Yeah.
Yo.
Yeah.
And I have to describe it like that because that's really what it is.
I don't even have a sleep schedule at this point.
I used to, like, go to bed at, like, 10. Now it's whatever it really needs to be. Now sometimes it's, like, 1, 2. It's been 5 at times.
Yeah. It's so real, like, bad. Like, what really even horrible. Is sleep at this point?
Like, sometimes I try to make myself fall asleep before 12 o'clock so I know, like, if I'm like, okay, I still have time to fall asleep. And then I look, and it's, like, 1 o'clock, and I'm like, never mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even want to fall asleep because I'm not tired. And so I just have the TV on, and like I'll just fall asleep out of nowhere. I'm like, oh, my God.
For me, it's, like, I feel so irresponsible when I stay up, when I stay up late, because I wake myself up, like, with my alarm, and I wake all my siblings up. So it's, like, if I don't wake up, how are they going to wake up?
Yeah.
And it's just, like, it's, like, that's basically what, like, kind of pushes me, like, to try to, like, that's why I set about 50 alarms a day. Like,
and if I don't hear my alarm, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm toast. It's either or my dad's coming to wake me up because he knows I might be knocked. If I miss my alarm, it's what my dad does. Like, he'll call me. He'll be like, you up? And I have to respond to him. If I don't respond, that means I'm asleep or I'm not, or probably I'm not responsive, maybe dead. But not responsive. And so, like, I'm probably down atrocious, like, sleep, knocked in the deepest sleep I could be.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, when I have those moments, like, it's just, like, those have built my character so much now. It's, like, I've become, I feel like this huge irresponsible person, especially when I fall asleep during a class. And, like, my dad will walk in, and he'll tell me, like, what just happened. Like, he'll get an email and everything. He's, like, I just got an email. He goes, oh, yeah, you're not in class. He goes, go back to sleep because I know you're not even going to be able to stay up through the next class. You're probably going to fall asleep again the minute I walk out this door.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, so just go to sleep. And I'm like,
I mean, I'm glad that your dad recognizes, like, it's better for you to at least get sleep and then try again than to force yourself through stuff. I also want to give y'all a little bit of, like, don't put all of this on yourselves as, like, you're messing up. I just pulled up an article from the Sleep Foundation that talks about how screen time is linked to insomnia for teenagers.
Oh, my God. Yeah. When I look at my screen time, so it's horrible.
Like, they took a poll. They found that 3 in 4 teenagers, 96% of teenagers between 15 and 17, tend to have technology in the bedroom. Now you're expected to literally be on a screen for school plus everything else, and you got to socialize online, we talked about, right? And so on average, young people get 9 hours of screen time per day. It's probably even more than that for a lot of people.
Definitely more.
No, mine, I had like,
right?
I had
with
like
school, actually, this was before COVID, right? So it's probably doubled from that, right? Because you add school on top. And the effects of blue light from electronic devices actually messes up your sleeping and waking cycle. And so 2 out of 3 teenagers have been found to have less sleep than the recommended amount. And screen time seems to be impacting that. So, and that's because your sleep cycle is based on a rhythm that takes its cues from sunlight and from being outside. So if you're inside on devices, it actually it deceives your body into thinking it's daytime while you're on those devices. So you're completely out of sync with like your natural cycles. So I want y'all to be like gentle on yourselves. It's not all your fault, right? Like this isn't about you not being responsible. It sounds like you're doing as much as you can to be responsible.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we as a society have to look at the downsides in this of also a virtual technology and get real about what the right balance is for people. And, you know, to me, I'm like, I always thought the school day was a little too long to begin with anyway, personally, or should be spaced
they
out different.
They could give us a cool 3 hours.
And, and so,
if it was 3 hours where y'all were actually there, present, learning, really invested, because that's when you did that instead of being exhausted for 9 hours, you would like that quality over quantity, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so it's really weird. So especially, like, with me, I have an iPhone, so most iPhones do this, and other phones too. Like, they'll say your screen time for this week is, like, it'll share, like, it'll say your screen time for this week. It'll pop up, like, as a notification, and then I click on it, and it'll say, like, your total, like, screen time for this week is, like, 13 hours and so. I'm like, what? I was on my phone for that long?
All right, so I just wanted to say before we close out, All views expressed on Clubhouse Radio are our truth and may not represent the views and opinions of the Clubhouse Parents Organization of Mental Health Association of Columbia Green. So, right now you're listening to Tempo by Missy Elliott and Lizzo. So, thank you guys so much for listening to our show today.
Oh, also, yeah. We have our shout-outs, too. So, big thank you to Waveform and WGXC for supporting this program. Shout-out to the Juice Branch. Shout-out to the Catskill and Hudson Youth Clubhouses and the Parent and the Mental Health Association of Columbia Green Counties for supporting this program. Shout-out to you, Imani, and DJ Phoebes for being on today.
Shout-out to DJ Popcorn, sound engineer.
Shout-out to you guys listening today.
I want to give a shout out too, like, as our listeners don't always appreciate, right? But like, there are four young people. You probably got another voices at this point, right? Like Imani and DJ Popcorn. We also got DJ Ricky and DJ Sean Money. But the four of y'all have been extraordinarily committed to this radio show through all of this with COVID. And you know, just speaks to like I'm so grateful to how well you show up to this, how you bring your full selves to this show, and like how you've taken responsibility and accountability for being here every week, for making that happen. Like y'all just spoke to how many stressors you got going on, all this other stuff going on in your life. So I just want our listeners to know how much love and work and dedication has gone into this show. And that just want y'all to know you're doing an incredible job. And I really hope that things like this radio show and there's that you can keep finding other opportunities to keep being in a space where you're learning together, you're challenging each other, you're having good conversations. So just shout out to all the ways in which we still get to engage with each other and still get to learn together and do that good stuff.
Right. So I just want you guys to take care of yourselves and have a great weekend. Peace. I'm a thick chick, I need tempo. Get up to the tempo. Get up to the tempo. Get up to the tempo. Slow songs and skinny girls. Get up to the tempo.
Here are the teens from Clubhouse Radio talking about whether or not to get a vaccine for COVID-19.
I'm DJ Ricky, and I'm here with
DJ Popcorn,
DJ Sean Money,
and Phoebes. What's up, y'all?
Mm-hmm. So for our first segment, we're gonna be talking about COVID, right?
Yeah.
What you doing? So first off, I'm gonna just have y'all explain. Europe, like, what's y'all opinions on COVID? Like, how do you feel about it?
I've got some fear that, it feels like a really dangerous time to me right now about COVID, honestly, because everyone's like, vaccines are coming, the end is near, let's go back to normal, but there's a whole bunch of stuff that's still really dangerous, so it's, that makes me nervous, you know?
Yeah, because I don't know if you guys know what the Spanish flu was, but it was like this thing, and it was very like, it was kind of like COVID, like it was like quarantining some people and stuff, and they thought that it had ended, right? And everybody went out and started celebrating and had a parade, right? Like a huge parade with like 250,000 people, like a great, like a gigantic parade. And then, They got hit with the second wave of the flu.
That's tough. You
know, before they even like finished, you know, celebrating, hit with it again, and it was worse the second time, of course. So that's like a big concern when it comes to COVID about celebrating too early and then having it, you know, come back even worse with like a vengeance, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I got a question for y'all.
Hey, what's up?
What's your prediction? Like, do you think that, like, COVID will, like, I feel like COVID obviously will go away eventually. But, I mean, like, if you had to like guess like an estimate, like what year would you say?
I'm saying
like we would have to stop wearing masks and stuff.
Oh well, I mean, some people still don't be wearing masks. So,
I mean, like, me, what would you like? I mean, like, kind of like back to normal type.
Back to normal. I don't think it's gonna ever go.
Or like a normal adjustment to like not normal, but like
the new normal.
Probably around 2024, 2025. That's my
2025. Wow. What about you?
I just feel like I don't think we'll hit any type of normal by any time soon. So, I like what Lincoln was saying, 2024, probably by the time I graduate, I'll probably be
2024. Yeah,
I'll probably have
by the time you graduate.
But I just don't think that they'll want to, like, play around with things too much where we won't have the opportunity to not wear a mask. Like, I'm going to wear one regardless. Yeah. And I know that's how it has to be.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Now, Fee, what about you?
Yeah, what about you?
That makes sense to me. I think it's like COVID will never go away. It's a virus that lives on our earth now. You know, the thing's been released. It's like the flu, right? Like, you know, it's just we gotten used to how to live with the flu. And I feel like what makes 2024 make sense, right? Because you got a couple years of getting like more and more sort of vaccination happening. The thing about vaccines is like, it's not just about us. It's about the whole earth, right? Like all the people, because this thing came from other countries, right? At some point, like we travel internationally. So I think that's a good estimate to think about when we would actually get to the point where there's like enough immunity from vaccination and that like it would feel okay to take your mask off. I'm gonna be wearing my mask for a long time.
I'll wear
my mask at y'all's high school graduation.
Now y'all, I'm not gonna hold y'all. I feel like in like what did you say, like 2024, like around that time we should probably like, I feel like around that time we should probably like have like more high tech mask.
We'll probably be on like the iPhone 36 by then.
Something like that. But I mean like I feel like we should like
iPhone 36 comes with its own mask and stuff.
Imagine
right, like iPhone
Apple
like
mask.
Right.
Yo,
like
probably
AirPods 14, like
comes with a bundle of AirPod Pros. You haven't heard those in a while, folks. We're bringing them back. Like,
just imagine a mask that your AirPods can attach to on the like the strings.
That'd be valid. But I remember what I was trying to say. Because I forgot what I was trying to say, so I said that. But what I was trying to say is about the COVID vaccine shot, right? Mm-hmm. So we have a shot for, I guess you could say, quote unquote, basically everything, I guess.
Almost everything.
But we don't. And like, me personally,
there's just certain things.
Yeah,
there.
Right. Like me personally, I wouldn't take it.
Yeah, that's beyond our research right now.
People that take it.
From what I've heard, it's safe.
Yeah, but I mean like,
nah, because a bunch of my teachers are taking it. And right. They're they came back to school teaching all that.
And I'm like, whoa. And like, it low-key kind of makes me feel very uncomfortable. Because like, look, think of it. If it's a vaccine, right? A vaccine has the virus in it to prevent your
The virus is dead, though.
But
think about it. We do that, too. We do have our yearly flu shots every time we have to go back to school.
Yeah, but then you got to think. There are some people that just don't take flu shots, and they're perfectly fine.
They don't get vaccinated.
Yeah, because they got strong immune systems. Flu shots aren't mandatory.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Okay, like, respectfully. Y'all take your flu shots respectfully.
Yeah.
If y'all don't mind me asking.
Yeah, I have to.
I mean, I think one of the things to think about is the relative risk maybe for yourself with taking a vaccine.
And so, on top of that, you also got
to... There might be somebody who's like, it's really hard for me to take a vaccine. I got other issues going on. I don't want to take that. If like 8 other people take it, they're probably still going to be fairly safe out in the world. Not quite as safe as those other people. But like, hey, I think you should have the choice to be like, a vaccine's not for me, but like that means I know I gotta really make myself extra safe different ways.
Nah, cause
right? You can't expect everyone necessarily to keep doing the same practices.
Yeah.
But Yeah, I mean, I want to hear your point though about like, it's sort of like for everything.
So
like this need to do a vaccine.
From what I think of, since you okay, you got to think, like take in perspective that people's like living environments. Like you could live with someone that's like extremely old, has a bad immune system. Like me personally, I don't take the flu virus or I don't take the oh my god, it's on the tip of my tongue. I don't vaccines. Take the flu shot, and because I know how my body reacts. Because like, look, you gotta think of it like, if you have something like a medical thing, and let's say you take the flu shot, right? Think of all the years you've gotten sick, right? And how bad it's been. Even though it's a dead, like, vaccine or shot, whatever, you still get sick off of it.
So the reason you're getting sick is because...
So that your immune system can get stronger.
Yeah.
Right.
But I mean, like...
It teaches your immune system how to fight
but
it
then,
off.
Like, you have a double-edged sword, right? If you take it, you get sick, right, for a short amount of time. But on the other hand... But on the other hand, your body gets stronger from it. Now, the reason why I say it's a double-edged sword, right, is because you get sick, right? And think of it. You don't know how bad you're going to... Like, mind you, it could just be, like, a simple cough or sneeze or anything like that. But then there are some people that are, like, have, like, it down bad. Like, the reason why I don't take the flu shot is because I know how my body is, like I was saying earlier. And, like, with me, I have very bad... Like, when I get sick, I barely ever get sick. My immune system, I barely ever get sick, right? So, when I do take the flu shot... I took the flu shot once this year. It was accidental. And I didn't know I wasn't supposed to take it because my mom... he was like, you want to take the flu shot just so you don't got to come back? And I didn't know. So, I was like, yeah, sure. And the flu shot kicked me, bro. And that junk went hard. I mean, it was terrible.
Like, for me, with the flu shot, I know that when I take it, like, it's something that I have to take personally. Like, my parents make me take it. If I had the choice, I would still take it.
Really?
For the simple fact that my body does react a certain way to it. Like, when I get certain shots like that, like, my arm and stuff will swell up. Like, I won't feel so good for, like, a few hours maybe, but then I'll be fine. But it's not really? Like it's not like I'll be greatly affected by it. Like my immune system like learns over time, you know, oh okay, this is good for me, like I can fight this off and then you know what I'm saying, I'll be good for the rest of the day.
Okay.
But that's really the only downside to the flu shot for me. And other shots in general. My arm just swells up like when I get shots.
Okay.
But no matter which arm it's on, but
so if it's like that with the flu shot.
Bro, when you were saying okay, I'm not gonna lie. I was trying to hold them while I laugh because that was hilarious.
What?
Whenever Bubba was saying something, he's like, okay. That was
funny. You're going to always laugh, right? But, okay, so if it's like that with the flu shot, what about the COVID vaccine? So you would take the COVID vaccine?
Okay, so with the COVID vaccine, I'm on edge. I would not, I wouldn't take it for the simple fact that, like, the things that I've heard about it, everything that I've seen. But when people are saying that, I've seen people that I know people have taken that are fine, they like show that people know like that the recently launched vaccines are doing what they're supposed to, you know, which is supposed to fight off the virus or, you know, prevent it in some type of way and reduce the effects of the virus if you've already had it.
Then what's the difference between the COVID vaccine shot and the flu shot?
See.
Because like you said,
in some ways,
you come
it's kind
out
of
fine.
A similar conversation. Yeah,
yeah
like
you know,
it's an appropriate comparison, I think. Like,
you know, but it's just
it's a slightly different type of vaccine.
Right,
it's a newer thing.
Yeah,
but like
it just came out.
Coming
like,
in about
just,
it,
and it's just what I've heard about the vaccine is why I'm so on edge about that. But I'd gladly take the flu shot. But the COVID vaccine is something that I'm kind of on edge about. Like, I'll have to learn more about it.
How come so many people are scared to take the COVID vaccine? But they're not afraid to take the flu vaccine.
I'm not going to hold you. I don't like taking shots.
Because the flu shot is something that's been around for years now. And we've had time to experiment the flu shot, and people have gone through it already. COVID vaccine is something that's now been recently launched.
So think about years from now when, like, like our kids are like our great grandkids, whatever, having this conversation, and like it's gonna be a time where a new shot comes out for them. Talking about, yeah, we've had a COVID vaccine for years now. That's already been tested. Like,
I feel like at a point it may or may not become a normality.
Think so?
And I think the idea, like, you need to get a booster every year, like a flu shot, will be normal too. And the thing they'll do, just like the flu shot, is, and this is the beginning of this conversation, is about the fact that the virus keeps mutating, right, over time.
Yeah, it keeps getting worse.
So the flu virus does the same thing. And what happens every year is a bunch of doctors get together. They look at the research to say which strain of the flu or which 10 strains of the flu seem most common. And then they make the vaccine specifically designed to target those strains. And that's what everybody gets those years. So there might be a strain that's not covered, but it's pretty rare. And that's how they cut down. People do die from the flu every year, right?
Really?
People may still die from COVID every year. Yeah. Oh, yeah, like 100,000 people die from the flu every year, right?
Oh, my God.
So there is
a
point, sadly, where normal is sort of a baseline that people do get sick and die. And I think, you know, the important things for me, I know we're coming to the end of this segment, but a couple of things for me that I want people to remember about this vaccine. What it does is it has really positive results keeping people from ending up who get the virus having to go to the hospital or dying, right?
Yeah.
It helps protect against really extreme responses. What it does not protect against is you being an asymptomatic carrier, right? Mm-hmm. That's why the masks are still super important. Mm-hmm. Even if you're somebody who's been vaccinated, you have to keep wearing your mask because you could still get your loved ones sick who aren't vaccinated, other people
That's
sick.
That's so true.
Yeah, and
it's still the same. It's not like it'll forever protect you from the virus. Like, you're immune. Like, you can
right, and that's the other thing too. If the virus, the other thing about COVID that I don't think people are talking enough about is about 20 to 30% of people who get COVID have what's called long hauler syndrome, where they have, it's kind of like low key, like weakened immune system and fatigue for months and months and months. Like fatigue, hard to get out of bed, short of breath, headaches.
God.
And yeah, so this is another thing about this that doesn't get caught in the data because it's not as exciting, I guess, as shocking to people as the death statistics. But for the 500,000 people that have died, many, many more times that have also gotten this kind of long hauler syndrome. So I just want people to know that, like, it does matter. Like, people do get, like, it's not just about only 1% of people go to the hospital.
Yeah.
30% of people, right, might get this other side effect. So the mask wearing is super important. The vaccine will definitely save a lot of our loved ones, and that's awesome, but it's not a silver bullet, right? Like, we still got to take other safety.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for March the 11th, 2021. I'm Mike Clifford. Rural communities are big beneficiaries from the COVID-19 relief bill Congress passed on Wednesday. Eric Tegedoff explains.
The $1.9 trillion bill has some well-known provisions, such as the $1,400 stimulus checks, but it also includes billions of dollars in relief for rural and farming communities across the country. President of the Montana Farmers Union, Walter Schweitzer, says farmers in rural towns didn't seem to get much relief from the first two relief bills.
Our rural communities are suffering, and no one seemed to care. And this first $3 trillion, it seemed to miss Montana.
Opponents of the measure say it's too big and could overheat the economy, potentially driving up inflation and hurting consumers.
The bill also provides broader benefits like $350 billion to state and local governments and extended unemployment relief through September, reauthorizing a $300 boost in weekly benefits. The Senate voted to confirm Attorney General nominee Merrick Garland Wednesday. Garland confirmed on a vote of 70-30. CNN reports the former chief judge of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit has been praised by members of both parties. He pledged in his nomination hearing last month to fend off any effort by anyone to politically influence the Justice Department's investigations. CNN notes Garland said his first priority would be to fully prosecute the heinous crimes committed in the attack on the Capitol on January the 6th. Meantime, Politico reports the Senate confirmed Michael Reagan to head the Environmental Protection Agency, putting the North Carolina regulator in charge of restoring the climate and water pollution regulations that the Trump administration had weakened. 1 year into the pandemic, California is ranked the nation's 20th best state for children. That's according to a new report from the nonprofit Save the Children.
Researchers looked at the data on how many families experience hunger or poverty or lack the tools for remote learning. Will Detmar, California State Director for Save the Children, says the data on hunger is troubling.
One out of five California households are reporting that they do not have enough food for their kids to eat. That's 2.1 million kids in the Golden State.
The report found that 10% of California families say they don't have the right tools to get all their kids on Zoom classes every day. 50% say they're having trouble paying bills, a number that goes up to 65% for Black and Latino families. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The COVID stimulus bill aims to cut childhood poverty in half. The Golden State stimulus, approved in February, provides direct relief to low-income families, struggling businesses, and puts millions into state-subsidized child care. This is PNS. Calling the issue a matter of great public importance, a judge ruled that parents challenging the constitutionality of Pennsylvania's school funding system are entitled to their day in court.
The lawsuit claims that the state's heavy reliance on local property taxes to fund public education means children in low-income districts go without the educational resources they need. Pennsylvania ranks 44th nationally in state share of funding for public schools. According to Maury McInerney with the Education Law Center, the ruling means that all plaintiffs in the suit, including those whose children have graduated from high school since the case was filed in 2014, can continue to pursue their case.
They'll be able to present their own evidence and their perspective in our case, as well as to be a part of the remedy that would be fashioned by the court.
I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
Dozens of anti-domestic violence advocates in Ohio are coming together to call for improved funding for services that help people in crisis.
During the Ohio Domestic Violence Network Spring Advocacy Day, survivors of violence, advocates, and nearly 50 legislators will discuss the challenges shelters and survivors face. Policy Director at ODVN, Michaela Deming, explains that during the pandemic, domestic violence programs have been there to help survivors seeking safety.
None of our shelters closed. All of our services have remained open through all of these difficult times. Programs deserve our support, and victims deserve to have the state commit to making sure that we can keep our programs open so that there's a safe place for families to escape violence.
In 2019, Ohio funded domestic violence programs in the state budget for the first time and set it at about $1 million annually. Today, advocates will reach out to state legislators to ask that the amount be increased to $5 million in each year of the next biennium budget. Mary Sherman reporting.
Finally, Diane Bernard tells us criminal justice advocates are urging West Virginia lawmakers to oppose a bill heading to the Senate that would add up to 10 years of extended supervision for certain drug offenders, even after they've served all of their prison and parole time.
Ken Matthews is a peer recovery coach who served 5 years for two drug crimes. He understands the need to solve West Virginia's substance abuse crisis, but he thinks more supervision is a step backwards into what he calls failed war on drugs policies of the 1990s and would result in more drug users being locked up in the state's overcrowded jails and prisons.
Incarceration or long periods of probation or supervision hasn't been shown to aid in somebody reintegrating into society.
It passed the House by a vote of 68 to 29, with most Democrats opposing it. I'm Diane Bernard.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported, heard on great radio stations and online at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Grant. On March 12th, in 1 hour, 13 of New York's 19 House Democrats, including Representative Antonio Delgado and Paul Tonko, called on Governor Andrew Cuomo to resign. Cuomo is mired in 6 allegations of sexual assault or harassment and accusations that his administration manipulated data about nursing home death during the COVID-19 pandemic and that he rushed a bridge construction project to completion in time for an election. Delgado posted on Twitter, and I quote, "Being the governor of the state of New York is a privilege. Withholding critical information from the public combined with the growing allegations of threats, bullying, and sexual harassment reflects a culture of aggression that is unfit to lead. the governor must resign, end quote. Tonko posted on Twitter that, and I quote, for the sake of New York's ongoing COVID recovery and the millions of New Yorkers who depend on strong, focused leadership from the state capitol, Governor Cuomo must resign and hand the reins of state leadership to someone who can give the job their full, undivided focus, end quote. Representatives Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Jamal Brown, Mondaire Jones, Nydia Velazquez, Kathleen Rice, Carolyn Maloney, Andriano Espalat, Yvette Clark, Grace Ming, Gerald Nadler, and Sean Maloney also came out in favor of Cuomo's resignation as of noon on March 12th. Assemblymember D.D. Barrett, who represents Columbia and Dutchess County, is the only state or national level elected Democrat locally who has not called for Cuomo's resignation. Shortly after the calls for his resignation, Cuomo said on a conference call with reporters that he would not resign and claimed, and I quote, I am not part of the political club, end quote, even though he is the son of a former governor. He said, and I quote, I was not elected by the politicians, end quote. Sarah Tapton is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Greene County lawmakers heard public comment Wednesday, March 10th on the county's police reform plan and recommendations during a special meeting of the Public Safety Committee. The plan was released last week and offers 25 recommendations, including upgrading the Sheriff's Department record management system, implementing body cameras, and establishing a community advocate committee to review complaints. Tannersville resident Stephen Nash Weber listed several recommendations he said should have been included, such as requiring officers to distribute cards with their names, badge number, and where to direct complaints during every interaction. He said, and I quote, we have seen issues with this committee's ability to gather feedback, end quote. He added, and I quote, there's no better way of getting good data and feedback from the community on police interactions than that, end quote. Jewett resident Eli Bell also expressed concerns about the feedback gathered and the lack of transparency around the process. Greene County Legislature Chair Patrick Linger said the committee encountered, and I quote, a lot, end quote, of people who did not want to go on record. He said, and I quote, the committee did what they needed to do to get feedback, end quote. The Reverend Richard Turpin, a member of the Reform and Reinvention Collaborative, said the pandemic also made it harder to get input. On the subject of diversifying the apartment, KO resident and attorney Monica Kenny Keff opined, and I quote, you can't grab people off the street and force them to apply, end quote. While increased recruiting and outreach efforts were among the recommendations, there are limitations, Kenny Kep said. Several speakers emphasized what was missing from the report and the outgoing nature of the reform process. Collaborative member Rabbi Zoe B. Zack agreed there is always room for improvement. She said, and I quote, there's always more. There's always more room to learn, always more space to grow, always deeper connections to be made, and always greater support to give, end quote. She added, and I quote, I don't think we could have addressed everything, end quote. The full legislature will vote on the plan March 17th. A recording of the full public hearing can be accessed on the WGXC newsroom page. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Rick Carlin is reporting for the Times Union. New York has lost a court battle to reverse a ruling by the Environmental Protection Agency that General Electric Company's dredging project to remove PCBs from the Hudson River was satisfactorily completed. Northern Federal District Court Judge David Hurd wrote in dismissing the state's suit against the federal agency and GE, and I quote, this lawsuit comes too late and is based on improper theories, end quote. Hurd did note, however, that General Electric could still be held responsible for more dredging if the state essentially restarts the process that led to the $1.7 billion dredging project from 2006 to 2015. GE and the EPA in 2006 entered into a consent decree in which the government agreed not to sue GE if the company adequately removed PCBs, which were released from its electric capacitor factories in Fort Edward and Hudson Falls between 1947 and 1977. GE dumped an estimated 1.3 million pounds of the toxic compound into the Hudson over the years. The company agreed to dredge the 40 miles between Fort Edward and Troy as part of the 2006 EPA agreement. They took out about 310,000 pounds of PCP-laden sediment from the riverbed, or roughly 72% of what was believed to be there. In 2015, GE finished dredging, and in 2019, the EPA issued a certificate of completion saying the dredging task was completed. Hurd wrote in his opinion, "The language of the consent decree between the company and the EPA leaves a clear opening for the government to come after GE with the full force of the law to see the job done." The State Department of Environmental Conservation says it is considering its options, including a possible appeal of the decision. And you can read the full story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Next on WGXC, your creative community radio station, we hear from Amanda Lees and Jenny Getty, host of Dim the Lights with Amanda and Jenny, about what they've been watching lately.
Hello, and welcome to Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda. I'm Amanda.
I'm Jenny. Here we are.
Jenny, what have you been watching lately?
Oh, Amanda, I'm so excited to tell you. I haven't seen you in so long, and it's so exciting.
I know. I too am excited to tell you what I've been watching lately, but I want to hear what you have to say. I'm very excited.
Well, this weekend, I watched a new movie on Netflix that came out, like, I think a couple weeks ago. They just added it on.
Okay.
It's a movie called Space Sweepers.
Space Sweepers?
Sweepers, yes, okay. As though there's a broom. I have to say, I don't really understand the name. It doesn't really come into play so much in the movie. There's a lot going on for it, but there's not a whole lot of sweeping.
Wasn't entirely sure if you said Space Weepers, as in crying. So that's
Space Weepers. That's what I do when I watch any movie.
Exactly.
Yeah. But no, Space Sweepers is a fresh, hot new movie. It's multilingual. I think it's Korean, but has like, it's probably like 30% in English, like 60% in Korean, and like 10% in like many other languages, which is very fun.
Yeah.
It's about a group of people who are on they are space sweepers. It's really unclear what that means, but they kind of just like destroy space trash, kind of
like Math Blaster.
Like Math Blaster, exactly. Exactly like that. But it has nothing to do with the plot, so it doesn't matter. But
okay.
Basically, there's this group of people on a spaceship. They're a ragtag group. They don't really get along at the beginning, of course. Yeah. They're all really hot.
Love it. Love it. Really good setup.
It's perfect. An excellent premise. They find a little girl randomly stranded in another spaceship, seemingly with nobody watching after her, and then find out that she is extremely wanted because she's a really dangerous weapon, supposedly.
Ooh.
So they have to decide whether they're going to sell her to somebody to get the cash or try and protect her and integrate her into their family. And it's like all set against this backdrop of like intense poverty, but it's also very colorful and really crazy. And it's way too long, but I had a great time.
It sounds like a really tried and true sci-fi setup.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
I feel like so many wonderful sci-fi adventure movies start with a roguish crew in space and they're all working class and they're all like, we got to answer this call. I was just going to go on my vacation.
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
That is the vibe. And it's very sweet. There's like a couple of weird slapstick scenes that made me laugh. It's really chaotic, but I had a great time. The captain of the team is played by Kim Tae-ri, who is